Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, normally I play the legislative update from the Montana Family Foundation, but we kept rolling with the callers there at the end of the 6 o'clock hour, so let's jump right into it here. Here is the weekly legislative update from our friend Jeff Laslaffy with the Montana Family Foundation.
This time last year, we talked about an incident where the state of Illinois allowed a group of Satanists to set up a display and worship the satanic image of Baphomet in the Illinois state capitol. This week, Satanists in Minnesota were allowed to do the same thing. In both cases, the contrast was stark. Light versus darkness, evil versus good, truth versus a lie. On the one side are traditional nativity scenes with Mary, Joseph, and the Christ child, while in the case of Illinois was a manger occupied by a satanic image, flanked by two men dressed in black singing praises to Satan. As disturbing as these incidences are, it gives us yet another chance to talk about what Christmas is rather than what Christmas is not. On a broadcast that typically focuses on politics and public policy, it gives us a chance to step back and look at the bigger picture, to take an eternal perspective in the never-ending temporal battles. As believers in Christ, we're sometimes tempted to respond with statements like, Jesus is the reason for the season. And while that's true, it now seems trite, overused, and cliche. 1 Peter 3:15 says, be ready to give a defense for the hope that is in you. Christ is not just the reason for the season. His coming was part of God's plan from the very beginning. Prophecies foretold his coming thousands of years before he arrived. The Christmas story is all about God's plan for the redemption of his creation. The setting in motion of the sequence of events that ultimately led to a cross on Calvary years later and Christ's victory over sin and death. While Christmas has been politicized in recent decades, it's a chance for policymakers to be reminded that there's a much bigger picture. Lawmakers must yield to the ultimate lawgiver. Governors and presidents must bow before the King of Kings, and the Supreme Court must remember that it's not the Supreme Judge. Our image of Christ on Christmas Day is one of a baby lying in a manger, and the problem is, for some, that's where it ends. For some, Jesus will always be that helpless baby born in Bethlehem, but that's not where it ends. Jesus came the first time as the gentle lamb who, existing in the form of God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped. He remained the sacrificial lamb throughout his time on earth, and as it says in the book of Isaiah, like a lamb led to the slaughter and like a sheep silent before the shearers, he did not open his mouth. It's important for us to remember that Jesus was indeed the baby in Bethlehem and was also the lamb sacrificed for our sins, but that's not where it stops. When he comes again, he will return not as a lamb, but as the triumphant lion of the tribe of Judah. He will return in glory and majesty as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Politicians fear voters. They should instead fear the one who is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, the first and the last, the one who was and who is and who is to come. This is the Jesus that we serve. This is the Jesus that we love, and this is the Jesus that we celebrate. As the world distracts, distorts, and downplays the importance of Christmas, it's our privilege as Christians to remind them to look not at the baby in the manger, but at the Savior of the universe.
All right, thanks to Jeff Laslaffy with the Montana Family Foundation for that update. Merry Christmas. All right, big guest coming up right after this.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. Mainly sunny today, high near 53 with a few clouds. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy, low near 33. High of 56. On Saturday, lots of sunshine. Saturday night, becoming cloudy, low near 37. Sunny on Sunday, high near 52. Sunday night, clear to partly cloudy, low near 29. And that's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. A big, beautiful fur sits on display in the Library of Congress this Christmas season. It's in the Great Hall of the Thomas Jefferson Building. But the top of the tree was a little off. Rather than a star or an angel or some other appropriate top on the tree, they tried to put a special cap up there. It kind of looked like a coonskin cap. Or even a Phrygian cap, a cap which was the model for the original Statue of Freedom, which stands atop the Capitol. However, some believe the bonnet looked more like a hallucinogenic mushroom. The Library of Congress said it tried to celebrate liberty and freedom by highlighting the Liberty cap that is featured around the library's Great Hall. But the library said, quote, obviously the execution left something to be desired. The topper has been replaced with a festive floral arrangement. The Liberty cap is something which is spotted as part of the artwork which adorns the corridors and hallways of the U.S. Capitol and the Library of Congress. And as for the hallucinogenic mushroom-looking cap, perhaps this puts a different spin on the Yuletide classic, Here We Come Wassailing. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
It's the first time in 114 years that Montana will have two Republicans representing our state in the United States Senate. We talked about that and more with Montana's U.S. Senator Steve Daines, who was very influential in capturing the Republican Senate majority that's coming January 3rd. Full audio of our conversation, plus the latest on some Montana-specific priorities like the Crow Revenue Act, the Milk River Irrigation Project, and more. Full story, full audio, MontanaTalks.com.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
I saw a post on X and a statement here from Montana's United States Senator Steve Daines. He says this, the loss of 700 hardworking Montanans is a tragic blow to the communities and the state of Montana as a whole. I applaud Governor Greg Gianforte and his team for their leadership to support the employees and the counties. I'll keep fighting every day to find solutions to grow and protect mining jobs here in Montana. Of course, he's talking about the layoffs at the Stillwater mine here in Montana. And I know we're all thinking of all those families and those miners and all those communities here this Christmas. But we've got Governor Greg Gianforte's appointee, the director of the Montana the commissioner for the Montana Department of Labor and Industry, Sarah Swanson, back with us. Sarah, great to have you back on the show. I know you and your whole team, you surged into Columbus and provided great support to all these families. Apparently, the feds finally came forward on a grant request that you guys put together, but sounds like they didn't pony up near enough as what they could have done.
Good morning, Aaron. Yes, we did receive our notification that our grant award for the Stillwater Mine families was awarded yesterday. We received $3.5 million to support the families and communities impacted by the mine layoff. It is not quite what we asked for. We did request $11.5 million, so we are still quickly analyzing exactly what was reduced and what we can do with these dollars. But we are thrilled to be able to have any dollars to put to work immediately supporting these workers and their families.
Yeah, so the governor sent out a post on X as well, proud to secure a $3.5 million grant to assist mine workers affected by layoffs at the Stillwater mine. We will continue to come alongside the miners and their families. So, yeah, something is better than nothing, because you guys have been doing everything possible to provide assistance to the laid-off miners. But the feds, it's like, what the heck is going on back at the Federal Department of Labor? I mean, when we hear about all this money going to all these other people and all these other countries and all these other places, and it's like, what about these hardworking Americans back here at home?
Well, we're quickly retooling our budget, Aaron. We have submitted a very comprehensive plan to invest $11.5 million into this response. But all in, after 24 hours of looking at the $3.5 million award, we are still confident that we can support up to 600 individuals with workforce retraining, supportive services, and any secondary impacts in the communities from these layoffs. Within that 600, we think this is enough funding to support 350 direct workers, up to 50 spouses that are looking to return to work who may have been out of the workforce for a length of time, and up to 200 secondary industry laid off individuals. So there is still a lot of good that we can do with $3.5 million, and we're going to focus on the work in front of us And as soon as the new administration is seated in January, we'll begin working with the U.S. Department of Labor immediately for a secondary request, should one become necessary.
Should be a whole new day here in exactly 1 month, January 20th, when President Trump is sworn in. I know I've been talking with folks who said, well, yeah, we're already meeting with Trump's inbound team. I mean, they're already, working and acting like he's already in office, which is what you have to do. You've got to be able to hit the ground running. So what will this type of, this grant that came through and then other state efforts, what type of aid is this? What type of assistance does this allow you to provide to the Stillwater miners and their families?
Great question, Aaron. Dislocated worker grants are quite specifically designed for the workers themselves and their future careers. The first bucket of funding that we'll be allocating is for workforce retraining. And workforce retraining is a critical component of our strategy to ensure that these workers are able to return to the labor force quickly and with strong skills and strong wages in whatever new career they choose. So that workforce training can encompass a wide range of programs or initiatives that are designed to equip these individuals with skills and knowledge to succeed in the new job market. This can include formal education programs, technical training, on-the-job training opportunities like registered apprenticeship, or any programs with our two-year universities and colleges across Montana. For this award specifically, the Montana Department of Labor and Industry is already partnering directly with businesses that want to hire the Stillwater mine workers, with those educational institutions, and with community organizations, so that we can connect impacted workers directly to programs that are tailored to local industry demands in the communities where they've identified they want to stay.
Yeah, well, it's great, again, all the work that you're doing. And I heard directly from some of the miners, and they said your team was very helpful, very kind, very helpful. It was real support with real solutions. It wasn't just, oh, yeah, here you go, look at our website. So great job by you and your team. With about a minute to go here before our break, Sarah, just based off of your conversations, do you think that there's a chance that we could get the mine back up and running with some better policies in a new administration? I know it's a challenging question because it's global markets and more.
Certainly. Well, I know there's a lot of interest in doing so. It is the only platinum palladium mine in the country, and we have a ready-made workforce of miners who want to mine, generational folks, that this is the career that they know, and they're the very definition of Montana work ethic. Should it become available, I know there's plenty of folks that want to return to this as their career. But if it's not, we are still full steam ahead in preparing to set these folks up in training opportunities for the careers and the pathways that they choose that can lead them back to high-skilled, high-wage jobs right here in the communities in Montana that they want to live in. The last thing we want to do is force people to relocate.
That's right. Well, and all the more reason to get, the mine in White Sulphur Springs up and running and present an opportunity for miners there. And then there's other mining potential opportunities in Northwest Montana that have been blocked by these liberal federal judges and Democrat politicians. But so maybe we can renew those efforts as well. Sarah Swanson, Commissioner, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for your work as always.
Thank you.
And Merry Christmas to you and yours. Appreciate your time this morning. All right, quick break. I'm going to talk more about the congressional budget battles right after this. Jesse Waters had a great segment last night. A couple of key things I'll share with you next.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Government in general, and the federal government in particular, is a poster child for inefficiency. The need for an overhaul is not a hard case to make, except for one thing. Government is also large. There are more than 75,000 pages in the tax code alone, 50 chapters of federal statutes and regulations, 1.2 million sworn law enforcement officers. In some ways, the only way this gigantic enterprise gains any political acceptance is because it is inefficient. Can you imagine a world where every speeding violation was ticketed, every tax slip-up earned a penalty, every business with an ADA violation was cited? In truth, better efficiency in government must go together with smaller government, a government that can renew your driver's license painlessly, get a bridge built, and run the courts and jails. But an ambitious government that tries to help everyone with tax breaks and favors will never be efficient. Perhaps that's not such a bad thing. I'm Patrick Bakke.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
Media Minute with Howard Kurtz.
Elon Musk, the most powerful private citizen on the planet and probably the richest man as well, led the charge against the stopgap bipartisan agreement that was supposed to get the country past the next 3 months. And then Donald Trump came along and said anybody who votes for this will face a primary next time they're up. Now, Musk said some things that turned out not to be true, but it didn't matter. And Speaker Mike Johnson found himself, his speakership threatened, because this is the same problem going back, the media covers this every year at Christmas time, going back to Kevin McCarthy when he was speaker. That is, the Republicans want to have less spending, but you need some Democratic votes to make that happen. Donald Trump thinks being a disruptor is the way to go, and he wants to get rid of the debt ceiling. This is all money that has been borrowed already. With your Media Minute, Howie Kurtz, Fox News.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
The House failed Thursday night to pass an alternate stopgap government funding bill that still included farm assistance, though further action is possible today to keep the government lights on. The vote yesterday was 174 to 235, with 38 Republicans voting no and just two Democrats voting yes on a scaled-down bill to avert a Saturday morning shutdown with funding through March 14th. The GOP scrapped an earlier bipartisan deal after President-elect Donald Trump and billionaire Elon Musk opposed it. But the new bill still included $10 billion in farm aid plus disaster help for producers. Republicans like Missouri's Mark Alford defended it.
Missouri has 87,000 farms. We are losing 1,000 farms in America each month. Our food security is national security, and the Democrats do not want to support our farmers because of the high inflationary costs that this administration has brought about and the low commodity prices. Farmers are going out of business.
But Democrats lashed back that Republicans broke their own earlier bipartisan deal. Top Appropriations Democrat Rosa DeLauro.
I just remind my colleague and friend from Missouri that the compromise bill had support for the farmers, overwhelming support for farmers and for American families as well.
More action on a funding bill is expected later today. I'm Wayne Northlund.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's sneak on a quick phone call here, and then I want to talk more about the budget battle on Capitol Hill. Yesterday, you've been hearing the news reports how they're going to try to figure it out today. Jesse Waters had a great segment last night with a message for Republicans and a message for Democrats. We'll try to break that down quickly for you here before we get to our next guest. But on the phone lines, let's see, we just got a phone call here from Stephanie in, I think, Stillwater County. Stephanie, thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
Hi, Aaron. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment on Jesse Waters' show where he exposed that even our Congress don't want Obamacare. In fact, they want to opt out.
Yeah.
And, you know, my health care coverage is about $1,000 a month. My husband and I, we're healthy, have no disease or anything like that. We have an $18,000 deductible that we would have to pay. You know, that's our maximum out of pocket, you know. And so I just thought it was very interesting that even the congressmen that passed these laws don't want the coverage of Obamacare.
Yeah, they wanted to give themselves a pay raise, and they wanted to exempt themselves from Obamacare. And even though they want to, they've already forced it on the rest of us and have destroyed health care and health insurance costs in the process. Yeah.
Absolutely. And as far as our poor miners here, I mean, they're getting that dose of reality of what, you know, because it's always been covered by their employer, which is wonderful. But for someone like me and my husband that's self-employed, who have always paid for our health insurance, I think this is a big eye-opener for a segment of our society that did not realize and understand the burden of healthcare costs on the small business owner.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people, if they've worked for somebody else, they've worked for an employer, okay, they see what their take-home check is and they see what they're being paid. But then if they go start their own business and they go work on their own and become their own boss, then they realize, like, oh, wait a minute, now I'm paying for my own health care. Yikes. And even if you and now, frankly, even if you work for an employer, I mean, the employer sponsored health care plans are just, you know, it's massive deductible. I mean, it's Obamacare just caused so much destruction. Right. But then if you're self-employed, you realize, like, oh, wait, I have to pay all of these extra taxes, too. that my employer was previously covering. And so you start to realize, you know, if you weren't a small government conservative before, you start to become one pretty quick, I'd imagine.
That's correct, because as a small business owner, you know, we don't have any sponsored anything, including vacation time, PTO, sick days, retirement. And that's you know that when you take on a small business. At least you should understand that when you take on a small business.
3 minutes, stations.
And therefore, all of those factors play into what you charge, your hourly rate, if you work by the hour, or what you sell your goods for. And so that's something to keep in mind, too, for people that, you know, small businesses are the backbone of our economy, at least that's what I'm told and what I believe. And so when they look at their plumber bill or their electrical bill or whatever kind of bill you get from an auto mechanic or whatever, you got to factor in nobody's paying them besides themselves for those aspects of life that are very real and have to be covered. Or why would you be in business? And you need to make a profit on top of that.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you want to expand, and then think about all the government hurdles you have to get over just to try to build your business, just try to build the building that houses your business, and then just to try to expand
Absolutely.
Your business. It's just crazy. Hey, great to get your insight. Stephanie,
thanks
for the call. Merry Christmas to you and yours, and especially those of you small business owners out there that don't get any days off. And some of you are still going to be up and running on Christmas to serve people on Christmas Day itself. And, of course, thanks to our first responders who work and continue to face tough times throughout the holidays here as well. All right, since Stephanie mentioned it, or her comments, kind of let's go to what Jesse Waters had to say here. You know, because the Democrats, boy, they were chanting because all their little gifts that they wanted under the Christmas tree for themselves got taken away.
The 1,500-page spending bill that Congress tried to jam in yesterday just got hacked down to 116 pages. Congress just cut 1,400 pages of spending. I've never witnessed that before. And I've been doing this for over 20 years. Kamala's electric bus program, gone. The $15 million to make recycling more accessible, that's gone. The 12 biolabs, vax mandates, gain of function, gone. The law that puts them above the law, you know, so you can't look at Congress's emails, gonzo. The Obamacare exemption for members of Congress, that's gone too. Oh, and the $6,000 pay raise they were going to try to give themselves, no more. Either way, it was a big win for Trump and Doge, and this is the best Congress is going to do.
The plan that's on the table currently to keep our government open, but also the promise from the only president in my lifetime who's ever followed through on all of his campaign promises to the American people. Excuse me, I'm not done talking. Give me the same respect we give you guys. The deal on the table will keep the government open for the American people, and if you guys so choose to shut it down, it will be on you, but not the Republican Party. We will not be going back to the table. This deal stands as it is, so let you go back home on Christmas and explain to your people why you shut down the government, because we won't be doing it.
All right, and then a great follow-up response from Jesse Waters, but he also had a great message from Virgil in Billings on the Montana Talks app. He says, what the House voted on yesterday was not a clean CR. It would have implemented unlimited debt for another 2 years. That is no debt ceiling. Trump can say he wants to cut spending, but without the debt ceiling, that will never happen. I think some experts would, you know, some conservatives would disagree on that. But it's a good point to debate. It's a good point to discuss, because whenever we've had a debt ceiling debate, I'm really interested in the answer to this question. Maybe Virgil knows. I know Virgil's a smart guy. Maybe Virgil knows. Every time we've had a debt ceiling deadline and a debt ceiling debate, did the debt ceiling deadline ever lower spending, or did it create a last minute crisis and everybody runs around with their pants on fire and then the spending gets boosted by even more? The spending is the problem. Whatever the debt limit is or is not is a separate issue. It's the spending that's the problem. And the more you create this hair on fire, we got to do something, that's when the spending goes up like crazy and they do all this last minute garbage. And Jesse Waters basically tackled that in his message to the 38 Republicans who voted with the Democrats against the CR yesterday. Here's what he said on that front.
Only two Democrats voted for it and 38 Republicans voted against it. The Republicans didn't like that it raised the debt ceiling without enough spending to make up for it. Hey, guys, the debt ceiling is going to get raised. Everybody knows it. And if you want spending cuts, which we all do, you've had a month to hash it out. You're supposed to go into a room together, outline the cuts, outline the spending, and stick together. That's what political parties are supposed to do. But you're leaving this all to the last second like a bunch of kids. So if they can't get it done, they're going to shut down the government. The Democrats are about to shut the government down unless they get a raise. Democrats just voted against disaster relief, aid for farmers, pay for the military, and to keep the government open because the bill didn't have their pork and a pay raise. Our friend Newt Gingrich has said that there have been 21 shutdowns since 1976. Anyone remember any of those?
All right, and this is exactly the points that we brought up on this show yesterday, is that here is the problem, which is why we're ready to just call an end to 2024 and get into 2025 with a Republican-controlled Senate, hopefully some new members of Congress who don't want to just grandstand and oppose anything and oppose everything, and likewise a bunch of moderates who want to just compromise away everything, right? Get a new Congress in there with a president like Donald J. Trump who will call them out, who will hopefully force them to team up and stand together and fight, fight, fight. But really, the huge thing is going to be a Republican-controlled Senate. But exactly what we talked about yesterday. You've got some Republicans that are so squishy, they'll compromise away everything. And then you've got some of the Freedom Caucus folks that just want to grandstand and will oppose everything and anything. And so, in such a slim majority, no matter who the Speaker of the House is, you aren't going to get anything done significant. So, anyway, like I say, but let's just get this Congress over onto the next one. All right, back to your calls and more next.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, yeah, I'm glad we were able to talk a little bit about the, the CR, a potential government shutdown, et cetera, here a little bit in the 6 o'clock hour, a little bit in the 7 o'clock hour of the show, because we are almost completely booked up for the rest of the morning. Maybe here in about 10 minutes we'll have some time for your phone calls and more. But for the rest of the morning, well, we'll integrate your phone calls into the 8 o'clock hour for sure. We are totally booked. We've got Rob Nadelson, a former University of Montana constitutional law professor. He's going to join us, I think, I hope, for the entire 8 o'clock hour talking about the Montana Supreme Court. He just penned a column for the Independence Institute. That's where he's a senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence. The column has this headline, "The Lesson from Montana: Stop Judicial Usurpation Before It Becomes Too Late." So it's going to be great to have Rob Nadelson join us coming up in the 8 o'clock hour of the show. Then in the 9 o'clock hour of the show, if you missed the promo that I cut, we're going to have Senator-elect Tim Sheehy join us live. We're going to have some audio from my conversation with Senator Steve Daines. We're going to also have State Senator Carl Glimm talking about an op-ed that he drafted earlier this week about, you know, here's an idea to lower our Montana property taxes, which is something we all want to see as well, is a reduction in our property taxes, or at least hold the line and stop hiking it so much, right? But let's see. Now we've got a guest with us here on the phone lines. We've got Dr. Allison Harmon. Dr. Harmon is Vice President for Research and Economic Development at Montana State University. Prior to that role, she served as Dean of the College of Education, Health, and Human Development at MSU. Anyway, Dr. Harmon, great to have you with us here on Montana Talks. Thanks for your time this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Aaron.
So I saw a news release here from Governor Greg Gianforte's office here. Governor Gianforte celebrates unleashing innovation in Montana's photonics industry. So let's see, there's a new company that is now setting up shop in Bozeman, Montana, and apparently the Aurora leadership staff and community leaders joined the governor in cutting the ribbon on a new 78,000 square foot office and testing facility located on Montana State University's Innovation Campus, expected to create over 70 good-paying Montana jobs. And so anyway, yeah, tell us about this news. Tell us about this company and about this whole Innovation Campus.
Thank you. It is very exciting to have Aurora land in Bozeman, Montana, especially on MSU's Innovation Campus. This is a large company. It's headquartered in Pittsburgh and also has offices in California, but plugged into MSU's optics and photonics research a number of years ago when it purchased a company called Blackmore Sensors, which is a spin-out of a spin-out from MSU. So research started at MSU, so we're very proud of that. But Aurora has decided they're going to continue to work in this economic ecosystem here in Bozeman and hire our grads and continue to work with our researchers. So it's exciting for MSU, it's exciting for Bozeman, and I think it's exciting for Montana.
I'm always amazed, you know, whenever I just run into friends or random people in Bozeman, just the just the incredible knowledge and the incredible entrepreneurship that has filled up the Gallatin Valley. I mean, there are some incredible entrepreneurs, some people that just do some crazy stuff in the business world or in the research and development world that you live in there on campus as well. And so this company, so Aurora, apparently they specialize in the type of technology that could lead to autonomous trucking technology, self-driving vehicles. Let's see, Chris Urmson, the co-founder and CEO at Aurora, said, quote, "From early on, we knew Montana's photonics leadership would be invaluable for bringing safe, scalable, self-driving technology to the world. Our new Bozeman office deepens our commitment to the region and strengthens our ability to expand our fleet of autonomous trucks." Autonomous trucks, that just sounds wild. Sounds like something out of a movie. But big picture, the photonics industry, the Montana Chamber of Commerce had a big, you know, meeting in Bozeman a few months ago that we got to be a part of, where they were talking about the importance of the photonics industry. This is about so much more than just self-driving vehicles. I mean, there's national security implications here and much more.
All that is true. And I think it'll be quite a while before we see self-driving trucks in Montana, but some tests are happening right now in warmer states where ice isn't such an issue. Just happy that this kind of innovation in photonics can lead to ultimately safer roads. And we're all using some of this technology in our cars if we have newer vehicles. Keep us straight on the road. Tell us when there's a car in our blind spot. Tell us when there's something behind us that we maybe can't see in our rearview mirror, but that a sensor can see with a wider lens. So all of that is, I think, a good thing for driving.
So self-driving technology doesn't necessarily mean that, hey, we're going to replace truck drivers with, you know, completely self-driving, you know, robotic style semis that are going to be hauling equipment or hauling cattle across the roads. But what it oftentimes means is new technology that makes it safer or more efficient. Last time, I think when I was driving to the Glendive Agri-Trade Expo last February, I had a new rental car that I drove, and it, when you're making those turns between like Miles City and Forsyth, and you know, there's some turns that sneak up on you, it will literally follow the white lines. I mean, you don't want to do it, but you almost could, like, take your hands off the wheel, and it will even steer you around some of these turns, not the too sharp ones. But it's crazy when you think about it. Now, you still don't want to let it do the job the whole way, but you almost could, at least for certain stretches of the drive.
Well, it doesn't hurt, right, to have a little helper in the car with you and to tell you when you're getting a little too close to the edge. And maybe you're being a little sleepy even, which is not a good state to be driving in. But beep, 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 you know, that's a nice little wake up, pay attention.
Yeah.
You're not driving quite right.
Yeah, and the steering wheel, I think, even kind of, you know, after a while, it'll shake for you and say, hey, keep your hands on the wheel. So, I mean, even if you're not crossing the lines or falling asleep, it'll just remind you, hey, keep your hands on the wheel, even though we're helping you out here right now. And so, yeah, especially for a state like Montana, where it just takes forever to get anywhere. I mean, if our listeners in Billings wanted to go up and see friends and family for Christmas and they're taking off today, here you go. 6.5, 7 hour plus long trip, depending on which way you take.
What? Right, and I think with those long stretches that it's helpful to think about the future and what could be useful about autonomous, if it was a completely autonomous vehicle. There are applications that people don't need to be involved in, like a delivery, for example. It doesn't have to involve a person, and so if we get that far advanced, we can probably save a lot of resources.
There's some other companies in Bozeman and then some other research being done on the Montana State University campus regarding photonics already. It's pretty incredible. I know when the Taiwanese delegation showed up at the Montana Chamber of Commerce event, I mean, photonics is a big topic of conversation with our friends in Taiwan.
Absolutely. I don't know if you've talked about on your show our Headwaters Tech Hub, and this is a statewide, federally funded project designated last summer by the Economic Development Administration. $41 million coming into the state of Montana for five different smart photonic sensing projects. And this could be a game changer, I think, for that industry. We already have a great industry hub in the Bozeman area, Galton Valley. This Headwaters Tech Hub stretches from Bozeman all the way to Kalispell. And so looking to make a lot more connections throughout the state in this technology and its application from agriculture to construction to more learning labs right here on campus for workforce development.
That's right. You talk about vehicles and what photonics can do to provide more technology for vehicles. Agriculture is a huge part of that conversation, from tractors to combines and much more. About a minute to go here before we got to hit our break. Dr. Allison Harmon, great to have you on the show. What do you want to just tell folks in general about the research and development at the MSU campus?
MSU has so many excellent research resources, not just for our own scientists on campus, but for local industries. We have a whole gamut of core research facilities that can be used by external entities too, and we're really here to help businesses grow and develop, and also to help develop the workforce for those businesses. So get in touch with MSU if you need support.
All right. Well, great to have you on the show. Yeah, and it's just been huge. I mean, it's just amazing. And I say this as somebody who went to the University of Montana for undergrad, but the R&D being done at MSU is just incredibly remarkable. Dr. Harmon, great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for being with us. And Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Hey, happy holidays, Aaron. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Quick break here on the show. Let's see. What should we talk about with the quick few minutes we have left here in this 7 o'clock hour of the show before we get to Rob Nadelson coming up in the 8 o'clock hour? We got a lot we could talk about. I'll think about it during the break, or you can call in.
This is the energy of electrification. Available Type S high performance variant, nearly 500 horsepower and 278 mile EPA range rating. Choose from our complimentary charging packages so you can charge how you want. The all electric Acura ZDX. This is the energy of innovation. Acura, precision crafted performance. Count down to the new year in the all electric Acura ZDX with $0 first month payment and $1 due at signing.
Fox News commentary.
Included deep in the latest spending bill is a sneaky congressional pay raise. I'm Tommy Lahren. More next.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Join me every Tuesday as we cover the full range of topics that are on your mind and speak with some brilliant, talented, thoughtful women and men who have excelled in their respective fields and careers. Plus, every Thursday is your turn. You get to be the lawyer, and you get to ask the questions about whatever is foremost on your mind.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
You may be struggling to afford everyday items and pay your bills, but get this, you are do-nothing members of Congress want a pay raise. Buried in the bill to fund government through March 14th is a sneaky little provision to hike congressional pay. Some lawmakers, such as Senator Dick Durbin, feel they are entitled to a pay bump due to the fact they haven't gotten one since 2009. And there's a reason for that. The automatic annual cost of living pay bump afforded to lawmakers under a 1989 law has been consistently and rightfully blocked. Lawmakers haven't wanted to explain to their cash-strapped constituents why they feel they should get a raise, as average taxpayers struggle thanks in part to poor government leadership. But some lawmakers must be feeling mighty bold and entitled this go-around, and may have been hoping the pay hike would get lost in the 1,547-page government spending bill. Nice try. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at OutKick.com.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. Mainly sunny today, high near 53 with a few clouds. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy, low near 33. High of 56 on Saturday, lots of sunshine. Saturday night, becoming cloudy, low near 37. Sunny on Sunday, high near 52. Sunday night, clear to partly cloudy, low near 29. And that's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
It's the first time in 114 years that Montana will have two Republicans representing our state in the United States Senate. We talked about that and more with Montana's U.S. Senator Steve Daines, who was very influential in capturing the Republican Senate majority that's coming January 3rd. Full audio of our conversation, plus the latest on some Montana-specific priorities like the Crow Revenue Act, the Milk River.
Bear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ag Council.
Brought to you from the Hot Spring Spas and Hot Tub Company, Friends Recommend Studio. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
This is where Montana talks.
One thing I should sneak in here before we run out of time this hour of the show is something from 1 hour ago. So if you missed the 6 o'clock hour of the show, we got a great phone call from Tim in Savage. And we ended up talking about Christmas stuff and being deployed overseas during Christmas. And, you know, he's a pastor of a couple of churches, I think, still out there on the Mondakistan border. He's got a church in Savage, and then he's got a church in North Dakota, at least last I heard. And so anyway, so he'll be busy here over the next few days. But then I said, well, wait, Tim, what did you call in to talk about here? Because we've been talking about all this other fun stuff here, but I didn't even get to what you actually called in to talk about. And he was calling in and responding to, I think, something that played in the Fox News update at the top of the 6 o'clock hour of the show, where it was this news story about, oh yeah, all these Biden staffers now are now saying, oh yeah, we knew that Joe Biden was in decline early on in the administration. Oh, very early on. Yeah, we knew he was in decline. And then now all these reporters are like, oh, it's like this brand new breaking news story. Oh, breaking news. Joe Biden appears to be aging. Breaking news. Joe Biden appears to be showing cognitive decline. And it's like, breaking news? We have all seen it with our own eyes for the last 4 years. And you people allowed this guy to run a basement campaign even before that. And we were short on time, but with regard to that exact story and that exact angle that Tim and Savage was calling in to talk about, do you guys know Chris Saliza? I don't know if that's how you pronounce his last name. Chris Saliza. He's one of these like CNN or maybe a former CNN commentator. I think he was a Washington Post columnist. But Chris Saliza, the DailyCaller.com has this story. He has now, well, let me just roll a little bit of the audio for you. I hope it's here at the start.
As a reporter, I have a confession to make. I should have pushed harder earlier for more information about Joe Biden's mental and physical well-being and any signs of decline. So let me explain. Joe Biden was president from 2020 to 2024. I worked at CNN through 2022. During that time, the early part when I was at CNN, 2020 to 2022, people would regularly, Republicans would regularly ping me and say, why don't you ask more questions of Joe Biden and how he's doing? He's 76, 77, 78-year-old man. And I would sort of brush them off because what I would say is, well, there's no obvious evidence that he's declining. Yeah, he moves a little slower. He talks a little slower, but there's no evidence that he's declining. And the White House and the people around Joe Biden were absolutely adamant that suggesting anything, asking the question about whether he was in some physical, mental.
And anyway, you get the point here. So this guy who was at CNN for the first 2 years of the Biden administration said, you know what? I really should have pressed really a lot harder. I really should have raised these questions about, you know, because, yeah, he was getting older. No, you knew it. They knew it. They lied to you. They lied to the American people. We all saw it with our very own eyes. And we all know the very reason why people like you did not press further. We know the exact reason why, and it's because of the corruption in our media, where they are an arm of the Democrat Party, and they had to shoot down any questions of Joe Biden's cognitive or mental health whatsoever, just like they had to shoot down and censor anybody who talked about the Hunter Biden laptop, just like they had to shoot down and censor anybody who raised questions about their stupid COVID-19 lockdowns and mask mandates and more, which is why they justified their massive censorship operation. Anyway, just had to sneak that one in there. The left-wing mob on the Montana Supreme Court. An outrageous, laughable ruling came out earlier this week in the Held v. Montana case, the Climate Kids lawsuit. We're going to talk about that and more with Rob Nadelson coming up here in the 8 o'clock hour of the show, live on Friday, December 20th.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Government in general, and the federal government in particular, is a poster child for inefficiency. The need for an overhaul is not a hard case to make, except for one thing. Government is also large. There are more than 75,000 pages in the tax code alone, 50 chapters of federal statutes and regulations, 1.2 million sworn law enforcement officers. In some ways, the only way this gigantic enterprise gains any political acceptance is because it is inefficient. Can you imagine a world where every speeding violation was ticketed, every tax slip-up earned a penalty, every business with an ADA violation was cited? In truth, better efficiency in government must go together with smaller government. A government that can renew your driver's license painlessly, get a bridge built, and run the courts and jails. But an ambitious government that tries to help everyone with tax breaks and favors will never be efficient. Perhaps that's not such a bad thing. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.